Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I am Pura from Spring Creek, Brooklyn, New York. And you're listening to Soundcheck from WNYC.
And now, Soundcheck looks back at the pop charts of yesteryear and asks,
that was a hit?
Everybody was kung fu fighting.
They're coming to take me away, haha.
This is Soundcheck, I'm John Schaefer. Joining me for this edition of That Was a Hit, our series about unlikely pop chart successes, is pop chart columnist Chris Melanfi. Chris, what surprising number one hit have you brought our way today?
Hey, John. So today I want to talk about a rock, pop, R&B legend. I want to talk about Stevie Wonder.
Well, why would it be surprising to have Stevie Wonder have a number one hit?
That's a great question. Let's frame it this way. Stevie Wonder has had number one hits in three decades. He had number one hits in the 80s. He had a lot in the 70s. And he had one, just one, in the 1960s. Do you know what that number one hit was in the 1960s?
Would it be My Cherie Amour?
Good guess, but no.
Uptight?
Great guess. Also not the one.
All right, I give up.
The answer, and it was his earliest top 40 hit, is Fingertips, Part 2, in
what?
1963. Yes.
I've never even heard of that.
Yes, and that's why we're talking about it on That Was a Hit today, because it is even possible for a legend like Stevie Wonder to have a totally improbable number one hit. And not only is it improbable that out of all of Stevie's fantastic 60s hits, you mentioned just a couple, that this is the number one hit, this song almost didn't exist. It's kind of, quite literally, an afterthought. It is the vamp at an end of a live performance. It's not even the core performance itself. And that went to number one.
And was he known as Stevie Wonder back then?
Ah, glad you asked that. No, he was known as Little Stevie Wonder. Often, if you gave the full phrase as per the album title, Little Stevie Wonder, the 12-year-old genius. And that's how he was known in 1963 when Motown broke him.
All right, so Fingertips is the name of this song.
Correct.
And so what are we going to hear first?
What I would recommend we hear first is the original studio track. It was the first cut on Little Stevie's 1962 debut, The Jazz Soul of Little Stevie, and it was all instrumental and only about 3 minutes long.
That is Little Stevie Wonder and the studio version of Fingertips from a 1962 record called The Jazz Soul of Little Stevie.
That's right.
He's 12 years old, Chris.
Yep.
And I don't hear piano. I mean, I don't hear him on, you know, harmonica or piano or singing.
Yep. I'm glad you brought up harmonica because that's like the big thing you don't hear, right? I mean, if we think of Stevie Wonder and we think of the instrument, I mean, he can play multiple instruments, right? But when we think of the instrument he's probably most famous for, it's his phenomenal harmonica playing. And there's no harmonica on that track.
And no singing.
And no singing. It's an instrumental. Stevie on that track is playing bongos. So quite well, but, you know, certainly not right. What Little Stevie was going to become famous for.
All right. And this is not the hit.
No, it is
not the weird number one, but this is the setup.
Correct.
For what. Okay, so explain how this happens.
So a couple albums later, they captured Stevie in a live performance at Chicago's Regal Theater. It was recorded in, I believe, 1962, but then the album was released in 1963. That album was called Little Stevie Wonder, the 12-Year-Old Genius, and it's a live album. And they recorded Fingertips. In fact, Fingertips was the last track of the set. And one of the things that's amazing about this performance is it was part of a Motown review. So Little Stevie Wonder was not the only act on the bill. He was one of several. And that's an important detail, by the way, which we'll get to in a sec. In any case, live, this version of Fingertips went on for about 7 minutes. So it's quite long. It's pretty radically transformed. I don't know if you guys have the full version, but how it starts out is in and of itself interesting. Because you hear just a little bit of Stevie play bongo, but then very quickly he switches to the instrument for which he is now famous, the harmonica.
Jump up and down, do anything that you want to do. Yeah. Yeah.
And then when they get to part two, so they had to release this thing as an A and a B side.
Correct. Yeah. Just like when we talked about Shout by the Isley Brothers, right. And the way that was released on a 45, and, you know, 45s only had 3 to 4 minute sides. They divided this on a 45 into a part one and a part two.
And so it's part two, the B side, that becomes the number one hit.
Exactly, which is truly improbable.
All right. And this is how that B side, the live version of Fingertips by Little Stevie Wonder, begins.
Everybody say yeah! Yeah! Say yeah! Say yeah!
Little Stevie Wonder. So there we hear the harmonica, and we hear Stevie singing, sort of, the leading the crowd, you know, clap your hands, etc.
Yep.
Still an improbable number one hit. So this is, we're talking about the year 1963?
That's right.
Okay. Chris Melanfi, pop chart columnist and regular contributor to Pitchfork and Soundcheck, is joining us to look back at Stevie Wonder's unlikely first and only number one hit of the 1960s, which in itself is a big surprise. But then, as this live thing goes on, you went to great lengths to point out that he was not the only person on the bill. Why?
Because there's a moment in the full-length version of the track. It's about, I don't know, 5 minutes and change. In the single-length version, B-side, it's maybe two and change in, where it sounds like Stevie's done. He starts really vamping. I mean, he's already vamping with, you know, the clap your hands just a little bit louder. You know, he's totally riffing. But then he, on the harmonica, the band slows down. He plays Mary Had a Little Lamb on the harmonica. It sounds like he's kind of winding the crowd down. And then just as it sounds like it's going to end, he starts blowing on the harmonica again. And the crowd gets completely riled up and the band comes back. In fact, the band that was setting up for the next set was already coming on stage. I had to check two different sources. One source says it's the band for the Marvelettes. The other source says it's Mary Wells. But either way,
it's another band.
It's another band setting up for the next act on the Motown Review. And a bassist, reportedly it's Joe Swift. He sees that the band is kicking back in and he yells out, this is the most famous flub in the record, and it was left in. It's completely audible. He says, what key? What key? He's like, I'll play with you guys, but you gotta tell me what key this is if this thing's gonna go on for another 2 minutes, which it does.
That's a really wonderful moment that, you know, really makes this number one hit, Chris, completely unusual.
Very unusual.
The fact that there's this sort of this other bassist kind of wanders out and starts playing with the band.
Exactly.
So the album is Little Stevie Wonder, the 12-year-old genius.
Mm-hmm.
The album has this unexpected number one hit.
Yep.
How's the album do?
The album is also a number one hit. Stevie Wonder actually had both the number one single and the number one album in the country on the respective Billboard charts, the Hot 100 and the album chart, in the late summer of 1963, which is again, incredible. By the way, that album, Little Stevie Wonder, the 12-year-old genius, remains the number one album by the youngest artist ever. He was, again, only 12 years old at the time, and he was only the second teen ever to have a number one album after Ricky Nelson, who was several years older than that.
Wow. So this, you know, when you're a 12-year-old with a number one hit, that has novelty written all over it.
It really does. And that's the most interesting thing to me as a chart analyst about this number one hit. It sort of explains Stevie Wonder's career trajectory, and it gives you a little more context. One of the most well-known facts about Stevie Wonder, and the thing that everybody thinks about when they think about the arc of his career, is how he began to exert independence at the turn of the 70s from the Motown machine. You begin to realize just how powerful this move was by Stevie, because basically it wasn't like he'd had a bad 60s, as you and I were discussing before. He had phenomenal top 10 hits like I Was Made to Love Her and Uptight and Shoo-Bee-Doo-Bah-Day and all phenomenal songs. But he really was trying to distance himself from an early moment when he was kind of like a novelty act. You know, I mean, he was part of the Chitlin circuit, certainly as a you know, vision-impaired African-American performer. Ray Charles had already blazed a trail for him.
Right.
But he's still perceived as kind of like, you know, this novelty act. And it took him some years to really pull away from that and become his own man.
And his next number one hit would not be until?
1973 with Superstition. So it took him the better part of a decade to go back to number one.
But that career of Little Stevie Wonder, beginning with an unexpected hit in 1963, called Fingertips Part 2. Chris Melanfi, as always, a pleasure.
Thank you, John.
Very superstitious, writings on the wall.
Soundcheck is a production of WNYC in New York. Find out more about our show at soundcheck.org or just download the new WNYC mobile app. I'm John Schaefer. This is Soundcheck.